south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Just a little seminar update for you. I've extended the early bird discount till the 10th of February by popular demand. There have been certain people emailing me saying they're trying to get their ducks in line as far as time off work and all that. So instead of the cutoff for that $500 savings being February 1st, I'm extending it to February 10th. And remember, the seminar is from March 17th through 24th. Just go to expatplanb.com and click on the seminar link to get all the sign-up information and details. All right, so let's dive in. You know, once in a while I talk about cryptocurrencies on this show, Bitcoin especially. Since so many listeners got in so early. In fact, I remember early seminars that I did back in 2014, 15, and 16. Even then, in my very early seminars, I had Bitcoin speakers like Bitcoin Dan, who got in Bitcoin at under a dollar. How you like that? And guys like Oscar Miner, too, you know, one of the first Bitcoin miners. Anyway, I remember at those early seminars sitting around the lobby of our first hotel and people had their laptops open buying and selling Bitcoin. I remember a sort of a huge argument going on between one of the attendees and his wife, who was against it. She was talking about getting a newer car. He was talking about buying Bitcoin. The Bitcoin price was around, I think, $1,100. He was trying to put an order in for, I think, three of them and his wife was throwing a fit. I think in the end, he ended up getting one Bitcoin. A compromise. You know, you have to do that when you're married. And even so, the guy usually gets the shit end of the stick. At least she let him buy one for something like $1,100 or $1,200. I wonder how he feels about that now. I wonder how she feels about that now. She just threw away, even at today's price, around 50 grand. Even so, I'd say still, about 80% of the crypto, especially Bitcoin investors, are men and only maybe 20% women. Notice I said Bitcoin investors, not traders. There's a big difference, you know. You know, if you're a trader, whether it's crypto or the stock market or anything, to really make money, you got to dedicate your full-time life to it. It's really difficult to make money if you're only dabbling at it 20 minutes, an hour, or 2 hours a day. That's why in all the time I've been into crypto, which is 11 years now, I don't trade. I never have. I'm one of those Bitcoin maximalists who's in it for the long run. I got in before there was any other crypto. There was no Ethereum or Cardano, none of it. I learned from the best, Bitcoin Dan. He's such a nerd, he went over the Bitcoin white paper and the software code line by line to see if it was viable and revolutionary as promised. He even tells me he thinks he met Satoshi himself, though he won't let on who it is. He says he's 90 to 95% certain, but it was a long time ago, like 10 years, so he thinks he might be dead. And he's the one who said, if you get into Ethereum or anything else, any other coin, aka shitcoins, you're rolling the dice. You're gambling, like in Vegas. And really, I can't tell you how many horror stories I've heard from listeners telling me they shifted from Bitcoin into any number of shitcoins and they lost 90% of their portfolio somewhere along the way. They all tell me, I mean, every last one of them, if I'd only just have kept my Bitcoin, if I only had locked it up in a cold wallet, stuck it in a drawer and never touched it again, why did I have to play around? But they were sucked in by platforms offering a percentage of return on your Bitcoin if you'd only switched it to a shitcoin or gave them the Bitcoin to hold. All of that very dangerous. It involves a great amount of trust in others. People who you've never even met, who you don't even know. Maybe they have a glitzy website, but they've got no track record at all. So then what about your crypto portfolio? You know, coiners call their stash a bag. They don't call it a portfolio. I don't know why. Which brings us to this email, which is right on topic. Though, once again, I want to repeat, in all of the shows where I mentioned Bitcoin or crypto, I never recommended anything else but Bitcoin. Go back into the archives and check. I dare you. I've always tried to edge people away from shitcoins, unless, like I said, they spent hours and hours a day at it and became traders. Otherwise, you might as well play the options or commodities markets. Besides that, with this big FTC blowout, you'd have to be nuts or blind not to see, even way before that, years before that, that the crypto world was just full of scamsters. Scamsters. Is that a word? Well, it is now. And if you give out your email or your WhatsApp number, whatever, or check out lots of YouTube sites that are crypto related, you're certainly on a ton of lists and you're certainly being deluged with a dozen too good to be true offers a day. The thing is, even from the very first when those offers first started coming out, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, offering, for example, if you bought their NFT token or shitcoin, or maybe even sent your Bitcoin to their exchange, saying things, for example, like, why let your Bitcoin sit there stagnant when you can get 10, 15, 20, even 30% interest? That's how all Ponzi schemes start. The first ones in get paid out right away, and they think, hey, this is great, I'll put in more. And you know, I'm no genius, but I thought at the very first, how can someone pay out those kinds of rates? How are they making their returns to give you a piece and make money for themselves too? How can they pay so much more than market rates? Only by pulling a kind of Bernie Madoff. They have to have new fresh suckers getting in all the time to pay off the old suckers. Definition of a Ponzi scheme, right? Now, you know, that never happened with Bitcoin. If you've got your Bitcoin in your own wallet and have your own keys, it's 100% yours. You've got complete control of it. The scams only evolved when tokens, NFTs, and shitcoins came on the scene years after Bitcoin was created. So if you held your Bitcoin and your keys, you were always safe. Unless a person was foolish enough to send his Bitcoin to one of those exchanges that promised a rate of return if they held it. You know the old saying, not your keys, not your coins? Well, if you send it to an exchange, technically they own it. It's theirs, not yours. Just like if you put your money in a bank, technically, it's really not your money, it's theirs. If they become insolvent, there's a banking crisis, or the shit hits the fan, they can keep it. Says so right in the fine print of the contract that people never read. And that FDIC banking insurance, don't let that fool you and give you any comfort. If there was a general universal default, they could only cover about 5% of depositors. Did you know that? Anyway, it's worth it to hear this related email. Comes from longtime listener Jay. He says, hi, Johnny. Really loving your podcasts. Just catching up on past episodes as I've been busy over the past holidays. Anyway, just finished listening to your December episodes regarding getting scammed on crypto schemes over the internet. Guess what? I was one of those. I knew next to nothing about Bitcoin, but saw an article on the internet regarding a famous athlete that is using a certain online broker to invest in crypto and Bitcoin, etc., and was recommending it as a way to have an experienced broker help you to be successful at it. I was curious, so I typed in the name of the company, alphacryptex.net, and it was a real website. All I had to do was fill out the online form and someone would contact me to set up an account. Someone did contact me very quickly, and all it took was $250 US to start an account, which I paid with my Visa card. Then they used a platform called AnyDesk to get access to my computer and help me get my account set up and to set up an account with an exchange in my country to enable me to transfer money in and out of their platform. Anyway, needless to say, things went great for the first month. I deposited 12 grand the first month and was able to regularly make small withdrawals when I wanted to. Usually I would take out $1,000 to $2,000 a week. Then, he says, just a few weeks ago, they said I needed to withdraw all my money plus all the growth and bonuses I received all at once. Then I can reinvest if I like. I thought, great, let's do it. The catch was that I had to put the corresponding amount that I had in the account into the exchange, which was functioning as a middleman. And once they saw that amount in there, a certain government form would have to be filled out called Declaration of Proof of Source of Funds, unquote. They said once that's complete, they would release all the funds as Bitcoin into my wallet. They said that move was supposedly an anti-money laundering thing they had to do by law. They said the crypto Conduct Authority makes them do this step since they are not regulated. By the way, this exchange platform was supposed to be from London. I have my doubts that it really exists. I don't believe them now on that either. Anyway, Johnny, I'd love to come to your seminar in March, but the money I would use is now being tied up with scammers, I think. And I'm not sure how to get it back anymore. I've accepted that fact too. I will never see that money again, and I'm chalking this up to an expensive lesson on the pitfalls of naive crypto investing. It's a lesson not to invest when a person has little to no knowledge beforehand. One day, however, I'd like to read the book you reference, The Bitcoin Standard, and take Captain Mango's Bitcoin course. But not till I recover from the PTSD these scammers have been causing me. Anyway, Johnny, keep up the good work of educating us all in these obscure matters. I only wished I'd listened to your podcast on this subject earlier when it first came out, and not now, much later, as it would have saved me tons of money and grief and mental exhaustion. I have to sign off now, Johnny, but I'll use an alias due to embarrassment. Signed, Jay. Well, Jay, sorry to hear about that. Really sorry. Still, you don't seem to be taking it as hard as some people would. Some people think suicide when scammed out of that kind of money. Thank God you've got PTSD light. But believe me, I can hardly blame you for jumping in on those crazy-ass offers, the too-good-to-be-true offers like that. They've been floating around in the crypto space for years. However, I know you're one of those guys who doesn't listen to my podcasts when they first come out. You wait some months or even years and you stack them up. A lot of people do that, you know. They load maybe 10 or 20 or 50 shows into their iPhone or whatever. They stack them up and listen to them when they can. I've had listeners tell me they're so far behind, they're listening to shows from 2018 and 19. But I know, Jay, for you and a lot of others, that's water under the bridge, right? Though, for any of you listeners who bother to go back into the archives and listen to the shows where I talk about various crypto things, if you recall, the only hands-on training program I've ever recommended is Captain Mango's Crypto Course for Beginners. Believe me, anyone who gets on board with Captain Mango will never get caught in a scam, a Ponzi scheme, or a mess like Jay did. Sure, Captain Mango will teach you about shitcoins. You have to be educated about that stuff. But again, first he'll lay down the rules so you stay out of trouble. So anyway, for all you guys and gals out there who want to get the straight poop on crypto, write this down. Captain Mango's email. It's bewarecaptainmango@gmail.com. All one word. bewarecaptainmango@gmail.com. Just drop him a line and for $100 or less, he'll train you right up. And he'll do it live using the Signal app. One-on-one. One human talking to another. No downloads, no files, no pre-recorded mishmash. All right, one more thing about crypto. You know, the U.S. is completely and utterly broke, which is reason 2,865 why you really have to get the hell out of Dodge, get that plan B going, because there will come a time if you're still living there, they'll bleed you dry or they won't let you get your assets out of the country when you finally get that expat fire lit and burning under your ass. Anyway, the IRS wants to tax every single crypto transaction too, like we didn't know that was coming. And as usual, they can't say anything in plain English. It's got to be so complicated and twisted, it takes a battery of government slugs to write it up. So anyway, they just came out with their upgraded guidelines to tax you for the upcoming year and on your crypto holdings and transactions. So let me just read a short bit of this. It says, it's a legal requirement now to accurately report all income, including digital asset income, on your federal income tax returns. Failure to do so could mean fines, jail time, and repeated COVID boosters ad nauseum. Anyway, it says, as of now, the IRS has provided a detailed explanation of what constitutes a digital asset, including such things as stablecoins, non-fungible tokens, NFTs, and cryptocurrencies. Then it says, on your tax form, there will be a yes or no box to check. And the taxpayer will need to check yes if they, number one, received digital assets as payment for property or services provided. Number two, check the box yes if you transfer digital assets for free without receiving any consideration at all as a bona fide gift. Number three, check the box yes if you received digital assets resulting from a reward or award. Number four, check the box yes if you received new digital assets resulting from mining, staking, and/or similar activities. Number five, check the box yes if you received digital assets resulting from a hard fork, a branch of cryptocurrency blockchain that splits a single cryptocurrency into two. Number six, you must check that box if you disposed of digital assets in exchange for property or services. Number seven, you must check that box if you disposed of a digital asset in exchange or trade for another digital asset, like exchanging bitcoins for shitcoins or vice versa. Number eight, you must check that box, yes, if you sold a digital asset of any kind or otherwise disposed of any financial interest in a digital asset. Then it says those who tick the yes box must also report all income related to their digital assets transactions on the relevant forms. For instance, an investor who sold cryptocurrency during 2022 would use Form 8949, which highlights sales and other dispositions of capital assets. However, it says, and here's that tiny, tiny bone they throw you. It says, taxpayers should check the box that says no if they merely owned digital assets but did not engage in any transactions involving them in 2022. And they should tick the box no if they merely transferred digital assets from one wallet or account they own to another wallet they control or own. And finally, it says they should also tick the no box if they bought digital assets using real funny money currency like the US dollar. So there you have another 8 reasons to get that plan B going and get the hell out of Dodge, huh? And I just bet, mark my words now, that all these new IRS rules will be the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of gringos who weren't thinking about renouncing their citizenship, not seriously anyway, who thought maybe they might someday in the future, but it's just not that bad yet. Well, I got news for you. It's that bad. Let's see what happens when we get those renunciation numbers for next year. It ain't easy, you know. There's lots of hoops to jump through, but it seems like every month, every week, there's more and more reason to start thinking about it. Oh, and think about this. Let's say you're a kid, 11 years old, and you're playing around with cryptocurrency. You're in and out for 10 or 15 bucks here and there. And you've got no real income, no W-2 forms from anyone, because you're a kid and you don't work. Well, guess what? Now you got to file a tax form, it looks like, right? Isn't that stupid? Then again, maybe it's a good thing. Think of all the Gen Zs that don't work. They're living in their mommy's basements that are dabbling in crypto for 10 and 20 bucks here and there. Chances are when their tax forms start coming in, it'll really clog up the system, huh? By the way, here's a little story that might interest you. You've heard of Gad Saad, G-A-A-D-S-A-D. He's a very famous professor up in Canada, a good friend of Jordan Peterson. He's an evolutionary psychologist. Well, he just put out a short little YouTube that really packed a punch concerning the topic of getting the hell out of Dodge and even renouncing your citizenship. And remember, he's Canadian. In a nutshell, he's telling a personal story, and here's what happened. Listen carefully. Now, stop me if I'm repeating myself here. Anyway, he's written a couple of books, and his latest book, it's called The Parasitic Mind. By the way, if you want a copy of that, send me an email to expatfiles@gmail.com. I'll slip one to you. It's a great, great book. Anyway, turns out the book he just wrote, The Parasitic Mind, turned out to be a big bestseller. It never happened to him before. Never had a bestseller. In fact, many intellectuals write books, and you know, they sell 25, 50, 100 copies, mostly to their students and their mothers. Anyway, his book, The Parasitic Mind, was a runaway bestseller. Now, I might be off on the numbers, but I believe he made something like $650,000 off of this book. And he was so excited. He had big plans for that money. I think he was going to buy a beach house or whatever, pay off the mortgage, take a world cruise, who knows. So anyway, he's so happy. He's living in a cloud till he gets a call or a knock on the door from the Canadian IRS. They break the news to him that he's going to be charged 65% tax on the income that came from the sales of that book. He just couldn't believe it. Took all the wind out of his sails. That 650 G's suddenly turned into something like 220 G's. The rest vaporized into thin air. So he wrote some scathing letters to the Canadian IRS and some local journals and newspapers, saying basically this: I have no employees. I have no business. I buy no products for resale. I have no marketing machine. I rent no business office. I've got no handlers. I get zero favors from the Canadian government. No subsidies, no handouts, no nothing from the government. He said, everything I do, everything that made this book came out of what's between my two ears, my brain. On top of that, I took a year of my life or more, sat down and created this thing out of my gray matter, took a big risk. There's always a big chance of failure. The government didn't take that risk. I did. Those thousands of hours I spent creating this thing out of the pure gray matter of my mind could have been all for nothing. The public might not have warmed up to the book at all. I took the risk, but I could have lost that year or so of my life and all those hundreds of nights I burned the midnight oil. And the government didn't help me with or subsidize that midnight oil either. And the fact that the Canadian IRS will take 65% of my brain power, that is so abhorrent and so disturbing to me, makes me rethink how I'm going to publish my third book. Makes me want to leave Canada permanently before it's published. Move to another country, another jurisdiction that does not treat its most productive people like bonded servants. In fact, he says, I feel like I don't own my brain. The government owns it and I'm only renting 35% of it. Anyway, that's about the gist of it. It's happening in the US, Canada, and Europe and all first world countries. It's happening, all right. The most productive members of our society, the ones that take the risks, are the ones first world oppressive tax systems most punish. And it's true, no one likes to pay taxes, but there's a limit, and Professor Gadsad has certainly reached his. By the way, when I sit down with Latinos, smart Latinos, often with Latinos who've got advanced degrees, some who have visited the States, almost always, Disney World. That is, you know, the Mecca for Latinos. For Jews, it's the promised land. Israel and the Wailing Wall. Every Jewish person I know says he wants to visit there at least once in his life. For Muslims, it's Mecca. Same thing. They all want to visit Mecca at least once before they die. For Latinos, just ask anyone and they'll tell you it's Disney World. Anyway, when it comes to even smart, educated Latinos, if they've been to the States for a vacation, they know how expensive it is compared to Latin America. But they don't get the tax system. They don't realize how oppressive it is. When I tell them that everyone in America that's on the books pays at least 50% of his income in taxes when you add them all together, state, federal, local, plus all the fees and licenses, etc., gasoline tax, property tax, FICA, Social Security, you tell a Latino that and their eyes just glaze over. They don't believe it because they've never lived or worked there. The fact is they don't want to believe it. They still think America's the promised land. Boy, do we know better, but you can never dissuade a Latino from that fantasy. All right, changing gears. Here's a country we don't talk about too much because I really don't recommend living there or having a plan B there. I never did, but it's a nice place to visit. Talking about Chile. Well, if you're thinking about having your plan B in Chile, you've heard it values the rule of law and is now nearly a first world country. That's the rumor, right? Well, you better think twice. According to the Chilean news outlet Moneda, the government has gone first world woke. Yep, that's right. Turns out the Chilean government's formed a new Ministry of Women and Gender Equality, initiated by the government of Chilean President Gabriel Boric. He's created a new undersecretary cabinet department that focuses on addressing issues that'll correspond to the LGBT WTF community and its priorities. Turns out the first initiatives will join a wave of plans that seek to establish a regimen of protection and reparations for all LGBTQ WTF people and their families. Yep, they said they're going to develop a plan for reparations. Let's see how that goes. Reparations for what and just who is going to qualify? I mean, look, if the government suddenly announces they're going to give away 10 grand to everyone who's been damaged as an LGBT person, and all you have to do is fill in a form and dress funny at the interview, I wonder how many normal people would just say, I want a piece of that. Oops, I slipped and said the word normal. Guess I'll get canceled for that, huh? Because these days I understand everything and nothing can be normal. So anyway, this new department will focus on the rights of people of gender diversity to create a special undersecretariat that would begin its operations in the second half of 2023. And it'll be headed up by transgender deputy Amelia Schneider, who was recently quoted on the air, Television 13, saying, quote, we will address the priorities of the LGBT community by first addressing their integration into the government workforce and institutions. Meanwhile, the Chilean business sector has come out with a press release saying the new LGBT WTF initiatives and the new tax increases required to fund it will most certainly sink the economy. So the business community is more than against it. Meanwhile, just talk of this initiative in the media is generating a chilling effect on internal investment. Currently, the figure for capital flight out of Chile is at an all-time high. In 2022, it stands at $50 billion, the equivalent of 1/6 of Chile's annual economic production. That's a huge and unprecedented amount of money. In fact, the country's outflows are now greater than the inflows, similar to what's happening in other countries that have elected socialist-leaning presidents like Brazil and Colombia. No country's economy can survive for long when cash and capital outflows are greater than the inflows. Meanwhile, Chile's socialist-leaning president Boric has promised over and over in the media to tax the rich and redistribute all Chilean wealth. It turns out he's said that many times in the media, and every time he said it, economists are reporting savings and investment capital flow right out the door. Now, according to Juan Ignacio Correo, an investment broker at Avanti Brokerage Office, he revealed that his clients used to, until last year, keep about 70% of their assets locally and 30% abroad. However, he said just this last year, the exact opposite is happening. The Chilean business sector is running scared, even as the polls give the new government a 70% disapproval rate. So anyway, Chile's fashionable march towards socialism is doing one thing for sure, expanding the bureaucracy itself. So for all you listeners, the question is, are you still thinking about having a plan B in Chile? Nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. And now, yet another one of our amusing emails from one of our listeners. This is from Cliff, living in Ecuador. He says, Johnny, on a past show, you were talking about stealing manhole covers. That's certainly a fact in my new country of Ecuador. He says, there'll be times you're driving along and way up ahead, maybe a block or two, you'll see what looks like a tree or a bush growing right out of the middle of the road. But it's an illusion, you see. What it really is someone stolen a manhole cover. It's gone missing for quite a while, and the municipality never replaced it. And in time, unlucky vehicles will hit it dead center, wiping out the suspension and causing other grave damage. So it's usually one of the neighbors who'll take the bull by the horns and stick a branch or a bush in there as a warning to people who are approaching. It's another reason, Johnny, it's not a good idea to drive at night. Then he says, you know, there are many statues and monuments in Ecuador with metal plaques and bases. And if you look close, you'll inevitably see little scrapes where thieves scratch the plates to identify the type of metal and its purity. Then he says, two bronze plaques on the base of the statue of Benigno Malo were stolen last week using pry bars to remove the plaques. Supposedly, they were made of bronze and silver. That's what they're saying in the news, but I doubt there was real silver in there. Then he says, for a few years now, people have been stealing bronze or ductile iron manhole covers to melt them down and sell the metal. In fact, he says, Jose Laviva, the manager of the water and sanitation department for the government, said this was common, but less so since the manhole covers being stolen are now being replaced with concrete ones that have a thin plate of metal over them, not worth stealing. He says, this also used to be a big problem with catch basin grates where water flowed, which are now made of welded rebar, which is too cheap to steal. However, he said, water control valves throughout the city are made out of brass, and it's becoming a big deal because those things are disappearing now, too. Anyway, Johnny, just to let you know, it's not just happening in Guatemala, where you reported on it last time. It's happening in Ecuador and the rest of South America, too. Though, just like you said, I've been seeing plastic, heavy plastic, manhole covers here and there. Good idea, not worth stealing, but I understand they're about twice as expensive as the metal ones, so good idea, but we'll see if it catches on. Signed, Cliff in Ecuador. Well, thanks for that, Cliff. More to come.
South of the border, you've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.